Welcome to The First Serve, talking the world of tennis on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport.
Indeed we are for a Sunday morning. Good morning everyone. 35 days, 22 hours, 52 minutes and 56 seconds to be precise until Australian Open 2016. We cannot wait. The build-up is well and truly underway. Melbourne Park is alive for the December showdown. We've got a big show coming up this morning. Of course, the traditional Australian Open wildcard tournament starts tomorrow. It's a big carrot. 16 men, 16 women, a lot of our young players, some players who probably didn't expect to be maybe in the wildcard this year, are playing for a spot in the main draw. They don't have to go through qualifying. They're guaranteed $40,000 in prize money just to get to that first round of the opening major of the year. Francis Sawyer coming up in a few moments, the tournament director. John McCurdy, head coach of Tennis World down at Melbourne Park, who oversees the high performance program and junior development squad training, will also join us. David Drysdale, a manager at Leighton Hewitt. And of course, Vivian Christie, staple diet here on the First Serve, the editor of the Australian magazine, of course, covering the world of tennis. Great to see Paul Aiken. He is the coach extraordinaire down there at Middle Park, Port Melbourne, metrotennis.com.au. Check him out. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, BP, and good morning to all the listeners out there. You are 100% correct, mate. The run to the Australian Open is on, and with the wildcard playoff about to commence, it's very exciting.
Yeah, it certainly is. Just before we get into that with Francis Sawyer, of course, it came out on Friday, just to paint the picture of what the Australian Open is going to look like in terms of the field. So yes, what we've got is the world's top 99 men and 99 of the top 100 women are going to be here for the Australian Open. So just for the men, for those that might be quite across it, 104 direct entries into the men's draw, 128 in total, 16 qualifiers, 8 wildcards. So the top 99 are there. There are 5 players who come back into the fold who have a protected ranking from 2015. Tommy Haas is back. He must be. He's about to crack 40, Tommy Haas. He's not too far away.
27, but the guy can play.
Unbelievable. Julien Benneteau, the Frenchman, who's been injured this year. Janko Tipsarevic has had a horrible couple of years with injury. Was top 10 at one stage.
Terrible
the bispectacled man from Serbia. Brian Baker, speaking of a man who's just had an injury-plagued career, hasn't played for a couple of years, got a protected ranking of 56, the American, and Dmitry Tursunov, the veteran Russian, which means, Paul,
yes,
but 5 players who normally would have got in directly. The great Dirty Seller, who just flies the flag for Israeli tennis.
Roadrunner.
Filip Krancevic, who I think took on Sam Groth the first round of the AO last year. Kyle Edmund, the rising young man from
Davis
Great Britain.
Cup hero.
Malik Jaziri, he's flying the flag for Tunisian tennis.
Yes, journeyman.
And Nikolaj Balashvili, not quite a household name, which means Matty Ebden just outside that cutoff at 106 in the world. So it'll be interesting to see what Matty does and whether he gets one of those discretionary wildcards. There's 3 left, Paul, to give away, or whether he's going to have to go through Australian Open qualifying.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, those discretionary wildcards, because we're not privy to who gets them or the reasons why. But he'd certainly be, it'd be definitely up there with getting one. JP Smith, I think.
Who's not going to play the playoff this week, starting tomorrow.
No.
What's your gut feel on what'll happen with JP?
Well,
had a great year.
Yeah, well, I think he has to come into strong consideration, having qualified off his own bat for Wimbledon and the US. And I think he would be thereabouts. Also, you'd probably look at Duckworth, I think.
Who's the top seed in the qualifiers coming up tomorrow. So Leighton Hewitt's got a discretionary wild card. Yoshito Nishiota of Japan, who's got the Asia-Pacific wildcard. He won that last week. Noah Rubin won the US wildcard. There's still one more to give out for the Roland Garros reciprocal wildcard. The winner coming up this week at Melbourne Park will get one, and there are 3 discretionary wildcards left. So that's as far as the men. The women, 128 women, 108 direct, 12 qualifiers, and 8 wildcards. So we know that 99 of the top 100 women are going to be here because Flavia Panetta has now retired, so she won't take her place. What it does mean is that the following players miss out who normally would have got in because of the protected ranking of a few of the girls. I can tell you, Petra Sikorska of the Czech Republic, Galina Voskoboeva of Kazakhstan, also Vania King of the United States, who comes back into the fold. These are all players that have been injured this year. Elisa Klebanova of Russia and Victoria Duval of the United States. So a few players miss out, including our very own Jamila Gajdusova, who would have got in if those players hadn't have got in with their protected ranking. She now probably is going to have to go through qualifiers or whether TA issue her a wild card.
Well, we look at the men's draw in this wildcard playoff is just so exciting and extremely difficult to pick a winner. The women, to me, is just as interesting because this is really a showcase for our future, I think. Yep. And my eyes are going to be firmly on Destiny Aviva, Kimberly Birrell, Olivia Trangimulia, Madison Inglis, and Zoe Hives, because, of course, Priscilla Hahn received her wild card yesterday.
Indeed, we're about to talk to Frances Sawyer about her. She has got through, which is a new initiative of Tennis Australia, so she doesn't get that wild card, having won the 18s into the wild card this week, but straight into the Australian Open. There are two discretionary women's wild cards still to give away. One, Roland Garros reciprocal wild card. Tammy Paterson, who we had on the show last week, she's through. Samantha Crawford has won the US reciprocal. And Han Jain, who won the Asia-Pacific wildcard, and, of course, the winner of the AO playoff coming up this week. So still a few spots to be filled, but that just gives you an idea of what the field is going to look like. And, gee, we're blessed to have the best men and the best women in town. 9429 1116 at any time if you want to call into the show. Of course, for anyone that does call in, a nice family pass from an Australian Open guided tour down at Melbourne Park with thanks to our friends at Tennis World. You too can have a Grand Slam experience with Tennis World, court hire, coaching, function rooms and more for all things tennis. Head to tennisworld.net.au. Let's head down to Melbourne Park. We're going to catch up with Frances Sawyer. Australian Open wildcard, of course, gets underway at Melbourne Park tomorrow. It's a huge carrot for the players. One male, one female makes it straight through to the Australian Open main draw in January. Let's have a chat to the tournament director, Frances Sawyer. Good morning, Frances.
Morning, Brett. How's it going?
Hey, good to speak to you. Really well. The draw, of course, coming up in about an hour's time, so we'll know what the matchups are going to look like, certainly on day one across the men and the women. But just sort of scanning down over the last couple of days, looking at the 16 men, the 16 women, we've got some great competition coming up this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really strong field, you know, in both the men's and the women's, and you know, I think everyone's looking forward to a great event.
One thing we do need to clarify, of course, well done to Priscilla Hahn, fantastic effort.
Yes.
The way she's tracking to win the under 18 nationals. She was originally named in the 16 women field, but you can tell us a bit about her replacement that's going to come in to take her place in the tournament.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was fantastic for the first time that the winner of the 18 and under girls Australian Championships got a main draw wild card, and Priscilla beat Madison Inglis yesterday in the final, and you know, was just, you know, just excited about the opportunity to play in her first main draw. So she doesn't obviously need to play the wildcard playoff this week, and her replacement is Kayla McPhee, another Queenslander as well. And Kayla got to the quarterfinals of the 18 under nationals last week, just losing a tight three-set battle in the quarters to Madison Inglis. So I think she'll be in good form, and you know, may do some do some damage.
Congratulations, Frances, on a stunning draw, particularly in the men's field. It's a fantastic concept, the wildcard playoff, as it really gives the community a chance to see the next generation of Australian talent, and it's free.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, to promote the summer of tennis, you know, and to promote great competition, you know, it's the Australian Open conditions for the men's and the women's, so you'll see best of five sets and in the men's, and, you know, an opportunity for 16 players to play off for a main draw spot, and really sort of head into the Christmas break and the training period knowing that they've earned their opportunity into the Australian Open.
Mark Polmans is one we need to have a quick chat about. He gets an Australian Open playoff berth, of course, in the wildcard tournament, also in qualies if he needs it come January. So he's tracking quite nicely, isn't he? And that was a great match against Oliver Anderson.
Yeah, it was a great match. And, you know, he started off well, and then Ollie sort of got the momentum back, and then Mark just, you know, was too good in the second and third sets, and he gets a spot. He's got a qualifying wild card into the Australian Open guaranteed already, but he's looking to grab that main draw spot like the rest of the guys are. He's done well. He lost in the final of the 18s last year to Harry Bouchier, so he's gone one step further yesterday, and a great achievement in his last junior tournament.
And Frances, you've been involved in the tournament for a little while now. How do you see that some of the older players handling themselves in comparison to the younger players in the draw professionally?
Everyone's professional at this event, and this time of the year, they know it's such a big prize on offer. You know, in terms of my experience, I've done it almost for 9 years now. And you see the likes. I remember going back and you see when Nick Kyrgios first came on the scene. I think he played the wildcard playoff when he was 16 or 17, and no one, the older guys, you know, don't know a lot about these junior players. Obviously, they might have practiced with them during the year, but when you put them into a match atmosphere and best of five sets and with nothing to lose, the juniors come out really hyped up in those first couple of rounds, and you know, the older players then have to acclimatise and go, okay, this is a serious battle here, and sometimes you get a few shocks in that first round, which has happened to a couple of the older guys in previous years.
I guess that's what I was alluding to. I remember that match you were talking about where Kyrgios played Matosevic a couple of years ago and almost shocked him. Fantastic match.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely one. And, you know, there's certainly a couple of others that spring to mind as well. So we might see that this week with Oliver and Mark, who knows.
It's a good men's field. Gee, Duckworth, Thompson, Bolt, Reed, Seville, Ben Mitchell, Mark Polmans, and you mentioned Marinko Matosevic. I imagine he's probably not wanting to really be here, but he's coming off a really tough 2015, isn't he, Francis, where he didn't get to play a lot of tournaments. He's been injured. He's had to try and come back on the Australian Pro Tour late in the season. His ranking has really plummeted. So it's an absolute must, but a real opportunity for him, you know, having been the highest-ranked player on his previous highest ranking of 39, going back a few years ago. If he can have a really decent week, it might really just re-kickstart his career.
Yeah, I can imagine it's very frustrating for Marenko to have the year that he did when he was ranked so high, and now to drop back to, you know, the almost just inside the 300. But, you know, he's way better than that level, and we all know that. So, you know, hopefully he takes that opportunity. Training really hard. He's hopefully getting over his injuries, and we'll see him back inside the top 100 not too soon.
Good on you, mate. Really appreciate your time. The draw coming up, as I said, around midday. We'll have some updates here on SEN throughout the afternoon. We look forward to a great week of tennis tomorrow.
Fantastic. Thanks, Brett.
Francis Sawyer, Tournament Director of the AO Wildcard Playoff.
On 11.16 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
We certainly are. Welcome back, Brett Phillips and Paul Aiken this morning. Great to catch up with Francis Sawyer. Plenty of news around at 21 past 11, 9429 1116. If you want to give us a call, and all our callers, thanks to our good friends at Tennis World, we'll send you down for a nice guided tour of Melbourne Park. Now, Paul, I've got to run this one past you.
Mm-hmm.
John McEnroe, never short of a word or some controversy or
yes,
a comment. He is advocating, Paul, the removal of umpires in a bid to liven up tennis. He's also recommending tie breaks at four games all in the fifth and deciding set rather than at six games all to keep the fans engaged. Of course, he didn't like the chair umpires. J-Mac, just give us a quick thought on this. We haven't probably got a lot of time to elaborate on it, but do you think tennis needs to go down this track?
Well, I reckon yesterday morning when that news came out, about 10,000 officials around the world just choked on their Wheaties. We've always known from the earliest days that he hated umpires, and I think this confirms it.
Mm.
When he talks about the matches being for all and says that people need don't have the patience or concentration as they used to, he possibly has a valid point. But when he also talks about the players getting on too well and he wants more argy-bargy, I mean, his head must have been in the sand when Kyrgios and Wawrinka had the spat earlier in the year.
Yeah,
I think that's alive and well.
Mm. So if you're not going to have chair umpires, so obviously technology's going to take over here, and that means that, you know, players can have possibly unlimited referrals for line calls, and so you'd be stop starting a hell of a lot rather than just going on sometimes the chair umpire's decision. I mean, can you envisage how that might work without chair umpires?
Well, I think it'd be an interesting concept because I think some guys are really genuinely, they value the opponent's call and they get on well in that respect. But but others, there may be a lot of stop and start. So I think it'd need a lot of experimentation. But, mate, that is not going to happen. I mean,
no.
Umpires have been in the game for 120 years.
A bit like the Davis Cup. We can't get rid of the Davis Cup. We can't get rid of the chair umpires. Hey, what about Sonia Mirza, the International Premier Tennis League going on now? It's a bit of Mickey Mouse stuff around Asia. I can't say I've watched a hell of a lot of it this week.
No.
But it's the team environment. I mean, this is Sonia this week, who, along with Martina Hingis, just dominating women's doubles at the moment. Tennis is such a lonely sport in that sense that we travel alone on the tour.
We problem solve at an individual level, but the International Premier Tennis League has been different. We're all enjoying the team bonding. We look out for each other during matches. It's great to have had Roger Federer in our team in the last year, but this year we have an equally good replacement for him, and it's great to have Rafa as part of our team. We're looking forward to seeing the great Roger Rafa clash tomorrow, but she's actually made the comment that it's helped build friendships on the tour, that you know, playing with players that she wouldn't normally come across or have anything to do with on the tour throughout the course of the year, and whether that's doubles or you know, just other singles players that are part of the team. So we sort of look at it and go, you know, do they need to be playing tennis at this time of the year? It's a bit of a cash cow. They can make some money.
Absolutely.
That's great. But clearly, for when you're in that individual sport where you're travelling on your own, a lot of isolation, the players really revel in, you know, having that sort of team atmosphere.
That social, yeah, I agree. I think that that would be great as a player to experience that, particularly the tour itself, which is very individual and very selfish, and I could see that point.
Absolutely. It's got the coaching changes too. Madison Keys no longer working with Lindsay Davenport. She's now hired Jesse Levine as coach, and Borna Chorich has hired Miles McLagan as his new coach, of course, who coached Andy Murray and Sam Stosur, amongst a few players. So there you go, a little couple of little coaching changes.
And the big change, of course, that we'd be remiss not to talk about is the Federer-Edberg split.
Yeah, which we sort of touched on here on SEN during the week, and we know that Stefan's been probably a reluctant traveller. He was there for a year. Roger convinced him to stay one more, but he's involved in a lot of different things business-wise back in Sweden. Didn't like travelling a hell of a lot. Long days waiting around. Roger playing a lot of his matches at night, and you know, you're on planes going here, there and everywhere. So he was never going to be long-term, but clearly he's benefited Federer's game. He didn't win a major, so you know, pretty tough when you got Djokovic down the other end. But no doubt he's improved his game, the win-loss, you know, advancing the net a bit more, trying a few sort of showy tactics. So
that's right.
It's been a good little connection.
Well, I guess that one sort of blindsided me, is because we all thought that that was a partnership that was made in heaven, wasn't it? But we never know the true machinations of why these things end. But it does appear to be amicable.
Yep.
And Edberg, I guess, has a young family and wasn't prepared to do another year. But I'll be interested to see what Ljubicic brings to the table.
Big Ivan.
From a technical point of view.
Yeah.
But he's a little bit almost academic. He's been on the board of the ATP Players Association, I see.
Yes. Yep.
So, and that I believe he and Federer have had a friendship prior to this. So yeah, should be interesting.
We might get all the kudos, and Stefan's done the work, and Ivan will come in. He might be able to crack that major. There you go. And, of course, just split up with Milos Raonic, who's got his own little injury concerns at the moment. We talk about that men's field. Maybe some doubt that Milos, who is programmed to play in Brisbane to start the summer, but has got a few niggles, had to pull out of the IPL this week. So we'll see if he takes his place in the Australian summer. We went down to Melbourne Park during the week.
We did, mate.
Had a look at the December showdown, the 12s, the 14s, the 16s, the 18s. Really good to have a look at a few of the young players. One man that we did catch up with, Paul, is John McCurdy. He's the head coach at Tennis World at Melbourne Park. He oversees the high performance program and also the junior development squad training. He's coached just about everyone in the game. John, he's been around a long time, and Paul and I caught up with John about just the Australian tennis scene in general this week.
Great event, this event, with you know, they've got the best kids in Australia coming together for the, you know, 12s, 14s, 16s and 18s nationals, and then you've got the wildcard playoff next week for the main draw. And also this year there's a wildcard main draw wildcard at stake for the winner of the girls 18s, which is a new thing.
Do you like that concept? We've seen, obviously, some alterations. Can you give us a bit of background on the alterations to that? And we've seen, obviously, with the girls, with Tammy Patterson, we'll talk about her in a sec, getting an advanced wildcard ahead of next week's annual event.
Yeah, well, I guess they're trying to make the girls and guys earn it a bit, you know, by winning these events or doing well on the circuit. So I think that's a good policy, that they're not just handing them out and I mean, in the end, they do select some players for the wildcards, but and the other ones they have to earn.
John, without putting too much pressure on a couple of young players coming through, who are a few that you could name that could take the next step?
Well, look, I'm not across it like I used to be when I was involved with the player development, but look, all the ones that the public know, I guess, Kyrgios and Kokkinakis, I mean, they're just outstanding, you know, for their age. you've really got a bright future in front of them. Behind those guys, you know, there's Alex Bolt and, you know, there's even some of the later developers like Milman and JP Smith. I mean, they're yep. coming through and rankings are getting up. So there's quite a few guys that are around that where potentially we could have 8 to 10 guys in the top 100, you know, soon, I think. And with the girls, yeah, it's probably not as many, but I mean, you've got the young Destiny, you know, Bernard Tomic's daughter, sister, you know, is doing quite well. And there's there's others coming through there too. So yeah, there's a lot of talent around, as you can see from the event here.
And there's been a little bit of talk about the women's program. It's not quite flourishing as the men's is. What do you think is a strategy going forward?
Well, you've just with the girls, I feel like you've got to attract them to the sport, and yes. you've got to keep them in the sport.
Yes.
You know, I think that's one of the things when the girls. It's pretty tough, as you know, Paul. You know, when
absolutely.
They get to 18 to 22, and we've got a good example of Tammy Patterson, who's in the main draw this year, who's been through a lot and stopped playing for a while, and now is coming back, and hopefully will have a good career.
She's
the next
doing a bit of coaching with you.
yeah. So that was great having her involved at Tennis World, and she was really enjoying that, but. A couple of months ago, she talked about going back, and I said, "Well, you can always get a job here. no worries." Yeah, but it's, you know, you only get sort of one chance at it, and you know, there's plenty of time to coach and that. And so she's having another crack at it, and now she's at that age, 24 onwards, where she's been through a fair bit, and that's the thing with the girls, I think, you know, to keep them involved, and because it is pretty difficult those early years out of the juniors.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, I reckon that's the thing, John, that would interest our listeners. In such a brutal sport, played all around the globe, just got about every country now playing tennis, tournaments in every country, 2,000 players ranked. There is no easy path. You can start, stop, you can come back. That's a great part of it, so it's about an individual sport if you've still got the get up and go. But compare our players to the rest of the world. I mean, where do we sort of sit at the moment? And what's the biggest factor you need right now if you're going to be successful coming through the ranks to make it professionally?
Well, you've got to keep in mind, I mean, it's easy to look back into the past and say we dominated the sport a long time ago, but it's changed a lot, and it's pretty difficult to dominate like that these days. But at the same time, I think, you know, we're a sporting country, and I don't see any reason why we can't, you know, have a few guys in the top 10 and 10 or 12 players in the top 100, men and women, and we certainly should be aspiring to that. I think we've got a really good crop of young guys coming through. We've got some good young girls as well, and it's just keeping them all involved and trying to get the numbers through. To make it at the top these days, you've still got to have something that's going to separate you from the rest of the mill. There's thousands of kids trying to do it, and lots of good players that don't make it. So you've got to have something that's going to set you aside from the rest of the pack, really.
So is that a combination of your game and the mental side, or is it? I mean, because I watch a lot of players through the wild card. I come out and sit in the back blocks here, and everyone can play the game. Everyone's got enormous ability. So is it more the application and the desire to want to be the absolute best from a mentality point of view, and then I suppose what goes along with that is supreme fitness. I mean, you watch the players at the top of the men and the women's game, it's brutal when you're watching Djokovic v Murray, how fit you have to be to play this sport.
It's one of the beauties of the sport. There's just so many factors in being a tennis player, and you know, there's the mental side's huge, I think, and that sometimes comes naturally, like someone like Leighton, who was just outstanding at a young age, and other kids it develops over time, and there's a lot of examples of that where kids have had to mature and get more experience in that. But and the fitness is a huge thing, and you need luck with your fitness too, with injuries, etc. So it's all sort of working hard, but also looking after your body, and because it's a nature of tennis is it's year round, and you've got to stay fit and healthy to have a good career. And Federer's the best example of that, who's hardly remembering being injured, you know. And you've still got to have something, like you say, everyone hits the ball well, and you've got to have something that's going to sort of stand out. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one particular thing, but the serve's always helpful. If you can serve well, it makes life a lot easier. The returns, really important also in the game. Everyone generally hits the ball pretty well from the back of the court. I still believe a lot in Australian tennis that we need to have that point of difference with the volley. I think that's still something, an area of the game, it's probably the only way the game can get better, and it's a thing that's always been with our top Australian players, that we've had that ability to be able to vary our play. So I think that's important into the future.
John, you were involved in player development some 20, 30 years ago now, perhaps. You certainly saw the rise of Philippoussis, Andrew Illy. What did they have special about them?
Mark.
What do you remember?
Now I remember the guys battling out. They were big rivals right through the juniors, as you know, Paul. Mark. He had an all-round game. He had that, but I guess it. Once the power kicked in when he was 16, that separated him a lot from the rest of the guys. He had that raw power, massive serve and massive forehand, but he also worked a lot on his volleys when he was young. You know, you might remember he did serve volley a lot when he was young.
He did.
And he developed that ability to do both, you know, and then he could vary that, you know. So that was important for his game. Andrew was, raw power and... low percentage tennis sometimes,
he really liked to play all the time, didn't
he? But he had some weapons there that could really hurt, and so he had some great wins, and was a real crowd pleaser. He had a bit of a cult following around the world, and he was great, Andrew. But he could be a little bit up and down, I guess.
One young guy I want to ask you about is Mark Polmans, who I've seen play a bit, and I reckon he's got a fair bit of ability. It's a long road ahead. He wears the the Yvonne Lindell hat just to protect the neck there, which we all probably should do, Paul. So we get burned, although you're quite bronzed as a man who spends a lot of time on the tennis court. But just tell us where he sort of sits right now and what's in store for him in 2016.
Yeah, Mark's. I've worked with Mark quite a bit over the years from a young age, and he's a great kid. You know, he's got a fantastic attitude, doing absolutely everything he can to be a player. He just probably lacks a little bit on the serve at the moment. The rest of his game probably volleys as good as anyone around. He's won 6 professional doubles tournaments this year, which is pretty impressive for a young guy. And his singles is going well. He's just, there's a couple of things in his game, mainly the serve, which he's working very hard on, but it's just one of those things that's not natural to him, and and it's got a lot better in the last 12 months, but it's probably going to take another couple of years for him to really break through. But he's one of the young kids coming through that really deserves it, because his attitude's so great.
John, if you had a philosophy on coaching, what would it be?
Just mainly just how you go about it. I just put a lot of importance on how you go about it on the practice court, and also in your matches. And that's to train with a purpose and work hard at what you're doing and work hard on your weaknesses and try to be smart about it. Try and get a really good understanding of your own game, so that you know you've got a real clear direction for the future, and you know really. How to use your game effectively. I think that's really important for a young kid. And then to really work hard at getting the weak parts of your game better, and just have a real good quality with what you do on the court, whether it's training or matches.
Yeah, I think anyone who's ever had a session with you, John, would appreciate what you were saying.
Thanks, Paul. Good on you.
Just what I want to add in as well, of course, Tennis World's head coach. You've organised a number of tennis camps in, I think, Yarrawonga and also over in China. I mean, how important are these initiatives for tennis, and take us inside that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Tennis World's the commercial program at Tennis Australia here at Melbourne Park, so pretty much anyone that wants to play can play here, and we've got something like 800 members, and there's a lot of different aspects to the program. There's adults, there's night tennis, there's workouts during the day, cardio tennis, and we have a lot of different programs for young kids, from hot shots right through to the better players. So try and cater for everyone there at Tennis World. And I guess with some of the things we put together, like the trips to China, they're just experiences to try and put together good experiences for young kids that maybe they don't, not in a position where they get those opportunities, but something that's going to really benefit their tennis. Yeah.
It seems like, as an observer, you look around this whole precinct with the National Academy here and the clay courts, the indoor courts. I mean, it seems like
you know, we're in a pretty good position in terms of what we can offer those who come into the sport from an infrastructure point of view, from a coaching point of view. Is there anything, I mean, time always evolves and you're looking to add in new things. Is there anything right now you'd say we could add to our programs here to keep fast-tracking and developing our players?
Look, I think there's a huge investment going into it. I think it's there's just so many things for kids to do these days. So it's really trying to attract them to the sport and get families involved in the sport and keep them in the sport. Look, it helps if you've got a guy that's winning Grand Slams. You know, I'm sure if one of the guys come through or girls come through and you've got someone that's right up there in the world of tennis, that's as good a promotion for the sport as anything. So hopefully one of the kids will come through and do that. We've always got that weakness of being isolated from the rest of the world, you know, as far as the clay court competition at a young age. We've got the clay courts here at Melbourne Park, which is great, but coming up against clay quarters week in, week out in tough competition, that's probably where we lack, you know. But there's lots of trips that go away for the young kids, and that's why I think the focus has got to be on the development of the game and the long term, because sometimes at a young age, we can be behind the eight ball a little bit, even with everything we've got, just because of that isolation factor.
John, from coaching in player development for 30 years, you came from the country, is that right?
Yarrawonga.
Yeah. And you, listeners may not know, you made it through to, was it the fourth round of Wimbledon?
Yes, yeah. Yep. Many, many years ago, Paul, but got there.
Wow, still pretty good to be able to say that.
It's a mighty effort. In fact, a good friend of the program, Sir Paul, Peter Johnston, the first Sir's very own, is now he's just globetrolling, organising tournaments. John, all over the world. You want to play a fair bit of tennis with Jono?
Yeah, Jono. Yeah, we go a long way back. We worked together, played doubles, junior doubles together. And Jono's got, he's running a tournament in Russia and China. He just needs one in North Korea now, and he'd be right.
Well, if a man can open doors, it's Peter Johnston. Hey, great to spend some time with you. Good luck. We love seeing the emerging players come through. We love seeing the names develop. And it's nice to come down here and just observe the young players who are just simply got to put in the yards, and hopefully a few of them get there.
Yeah, thanks, Brett.
There he is, John McCurdy. He's a star down at Melbourne Park, guiding a lot of our young players, and they've all been down there at the December showdown. Just on the way to the break, Paul, if you're thinking you might be there, in fact, at the Heineken Live stage, what a lineup across the fortnight. If you're going on Australia Day, you might hear this mob called the Rubens.
Oh, yeah.
Have a look at Dan Sultan. There's going to be James Rain, British India, the Bombay Royal, Alpine, the Pierce Brothers, Diesel, Hot Dub Time Machine. That's on Super Saturday if you're thinking of going along. So if you sort of like the tennis but you want to get out and bring a few mates and have a couple of bevvies at the Heineken Live stage, you might hear the Rubens. We'll come back with David Drysdale and also Vivian Christie coming up next on the First Serve.
On 11.16 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
Welcome back as we squeeze lots of tennis news into our hour. If you've never caught the show before, if you're a tennis fan, make sure you're tuning in 11 o'clock till midday each Sunday right throughout the summer as we cover the big summer of tennis. Brisbane, Sydney, Hobart, the Hopman Cup building in, of course, to the Australian Open. Plenty of exhibition events going on. We've got the International Premier Tennis League. Maria Sharapova and friends are there playing over in Los Angeles this weekend. And, of course, for Leighton Hewitt, well, it's his farewell tour. And for the people of Tasmania, this coming Friday down at the Domain Tennis Centre, which is an outstanding venue, and I'll be back there for the Hobart International, it's going to be Leighton Hewitt taking on Sam Groth, who stepped up with the injury, as we told you, here on the First Serve last week to Thanasi Kokkinakis. David Drysdale, the manager of Leighton Hewitt, has been good enough to join us on the line. Morning, David.
Good morning, Brett. How are you going?
Really, really well. Just tell us about how the concept came about, because traditionally, for the fans in Hobart, they've had a WTA tournament for a number of years, but have never had a real opportunity to see some of the best men going around.
Yes, that's right, Brett. Being a former Tasmanian myself, I was keen to get Leighton down to Hobart to play before he retired. So I approached Leighton to see whether he'd be prepared to do it. And he, as a favour for myself, said yes, he'd go down and play. So I've subsequently put the event together, and I'm pleased to say that it's sold out.
David, it should be a fantastic match, some great entertainment, as you're really watching a champion server versus a champion receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, originally it was going to be Thanasi and Leighton, but, with Thanasi's injury, we were very pleased that Sam agreed to join in. And it's absolutely, I mean, Sam's had a fantastic year. And so to have the two contrasting games is certainly a treat for the people down in Hobart.
And I believe there's not many seats left, so you're going to get a really decent roll-up.
Yes, we've sold out all the public seating, so there's only some corporate boxes, a couple of corporate boxes left, so it's going to be a complete packed crowd. The weather is looking fine. I've been watching that every day for about the last 3 weeks.
It can turn quickly.
it can turn quickly, but I'm feeling very confident. It's the first time in about 40 years that Tasmania's had a former world number one male player play down there, so I think it's going to be a fantastic evening.
And speaking of the matchup, knowing how competitive Leighton is, Groth beat him in the Australian summer, gave him a bit of a pasting last year, so maybe Leighton's turn to get one back.
Oh, look, I think both boys are extremely competitive, and they'll play it in the right spirit, of course, but I think that, Leighton will be out to prove a point, and it's going to be their only major hit out prior to the Australian summer. So both boys are really going to use it as a test, and will go hard for sure.
So just traditional match conditions?
They're just going to play two sets.
Two sets, okay. And
if it goes to a set all, there'll be a tiebreaker.
Yep.
Before they play, Richard Fromberg is going to play against Terry Boucher, so it's the young and the old of Tasmanian tennis.
Oh, there you go.
And in between, little Cruz Hewitt's going to have a hit for about 20 minutes, so people can see maybe the future again.
Yeah, fantastic. I love the venue. I was there. That commentary box in Hobart is outstanding, and I had the week there for the girls earlier this year. So if anyone's listening to us down in Tassie, support the event. Snap up those tickets, the corporate box tickets, and get looked after for the night on and off the court. Just a quick one. How's he tracking late? And obviously we're getting closer to the Australian Open. Dave, just in his general preparation?
Oh, he's been training the house down as usual, Brett, and he's feeling great and really looking forward to his final summer.
Yeah, great stuff, mate. We'll catch up very shortly.
No problems, anytime. Thanks,
Dave
Brett.
Dave Drysdale, the manager there of Leighton Hewitt. I just want to have a listen to Chris Kermode. He's got a big job in tennis as the chief executive chairman of the ATP, just talking about how big a juggernaut this has become.
The big issue now is how you divide that money up between tournaments, between players, and indeed how you can give something back to the fans.
Yeah, I mean, we are, as you said, the commercial revenues of the tour have grown 200% since 2009. We are at record levels. We've done these huge deals with sort of partners, like Peugeot and Emirates and Infosys and LeTV. These are massive statements for our sport. So that's the easy part, that we've got the money in, and it is a testament to our product. But now, how do we distribute that money sensibly? We are an organisation owned 50% by the players and 50% by promoters. So that money filters down and goes to each party. Player pension funds, prize money, and with the tournaments, it's helps their marketing and PR and digital strategies. So that's the good fun, that we've got that money. It's a nice problem to have.
You talk about wanting to expand into new markets, new locations. Where are you looking at in particular?
I think, we've got to look everywhere. I mean, that's an obvious statement, but, we have the cornerstones of tennis. We have Europe, which is the stronghold of tennis. We have North America, Australia, traditional markets, and South America. I think we need to expand more in South America. It was nice that we had a 500 event now in Rio, which was a hugely successful event. But Asia is an obvious one. But equally, new markets in the States would be great. We need to expand in America as well. But the emerging markets, India, all the usual places that sport is looking to get in.
Really interesting chat. You can go to the ATP website and hear a bit more of Chris Kermode. He's got a huge job. It is a global juggernaut. The money in tennis and trying to extend the footprint. As Chris mentioned, all the traditional markets, there are tournaments. There are a lot of countries who are going to the ATP and saying, we want a tournament. Now, that's obviously the players owning 50% of the ATP tour. There's a lot of negotiating there. When do we have time off and how long do we have time off for? Mm. But if you love your tennis next year, ATP Media, the broadcast arm of the ATP World Tour, have announced this week that live match production of the Masters 1000 events, the biggest events outside the Grand Slams, will be significantly increased. from 2016. More than 100 additional matches will be produced, as well as coverage of doubles matches, which I know you are a big advocate for, that we should be seeing more high-quality doubles broadcast.
For sure.
In all, 24 additional courts will be produced across 8 of the ATP World Tour Masters 1000 tournaments starting in 2016. That'll kick off at Indian Wells, of course, in California in March. So more tennis for those that want to view it, Paul. And gee, it's quite amazing, the amount of money globally. They are just huge organisations, the ATP and the WTA.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's a lot of people or parties out there with different agendas and how to spread that that money and how to look at be the beneficiaries of and of what we see to come is very important.
Absolutely. And as long as they can just keep extending some money down towards the futures.
That's my big piece.
You know, I was looking this week, you know, a lot of the guys and the girls who are going to be at the Australian Open wildcard playoff in December. Like Gavin Van Papazeel has made 10 quarterfinals. You don't earn much money. You'd earn about $300 for making a quarterfinal of a futures, and you're travelling all around the world with the expense that goes on.
And we're talking about a world game. Yeah. What would the 286th AFL player earn here?
He'd be on some good coin. Hey, this is Sasquatch with a bit of hands. They'll be on the Heineken Live stage. Australian Open. Get your tickets, folks. Get to the tennis.
On 11.16 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
Welcome back to The First Serve, the Australian tennis magazine. If you're a tennis fan, you must subscribe, tennismag.com.au. Leighton Hewitt on the cover of the latest edition of Champion Spirit. Vivian Christie is the editor. Morning to you, Viv.
Morning, Brett.
How are you going?
I'm great, thanks.
Beautiful. Lots on in the world of tennis. The International Premier Tennis League, we've sort of touched on it briefly. I've watched little snippets during the week. They all seem to be having a good time. They're all earning some cash. Have you got any detail you can give me? Because I haven't quite been totally across
it. Yeah, look, I think this event, they're actually just having a lot of fun more than anything else. You know, I was talking to John Blom, the Aussie umpire, who's at that event during the week, and he said, you know, it's just really fascinating to see the players in that team environment. He said some are really outgoing and spirited from the bench, and some are really quiet. But, yeah, the legends are combining with today's stars, so they're just having a lot of fun.
And, Viv, the WTA Awards, Daria Gavlova and Petra Kvitova taking out a couple of big awards.
Yeah, so Daria Gavrilova, who, you know, now she's an Aussie, so we're really proud of her. She was awarded Newcomer of the Year, and as she should be, she had a great season.
Absolutely.
She beat Maria Sharapova, she beat Anna Ivanovic, she rose, I think, nearly 200 rankings places to end in the top 40. So, yeah, great year for her.
It's going to be very exciting to see what she brings in 2016.
Yeah, I think she's so competitive. I think she's the kind of player that will really carry that momentum through, and I know she's really excited for this Australian summer to be competing at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Serena Williams, of course, the WTA's Player of the Year, fourth consecutive time, seventh overall. She is dominating despite missing the little bit of the back end of the season. And Martina Hingis and Sonja Mertz, they're just absolutely carving it up in women's doubles. So they're going beautifully. And Venus, too, comeback Player of the Year.
Yeah, thoroughly
deserved. Great story.
Well. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's really excited to see Venus back in the top 10. And just everything that she's been through, I mean, she's the winning titles and, you know, still going strong and with such enthusiasm at you know, well in her 30s.
No doubt. And just one last one for you. We were touching on John McEnroe earlier. Just wanted to get your take on it, Viv. He reckons we don't need any chair umpires. Have you just got a reaction to that comment?
He wants more anger, Viv.
I actually don't have a reaction. I think it's just John McEnroe being John McEnroe. I don't think we're ever going to see a time when there's no umpires on court.
No, we love John Blom. I mean, he's a star from Australia.
Exactly.
We've got to keep him in a gig, just travelling the globe.
We love our officials.
Thank you, Viv. We'll catch up soon. And everyone, make sure you read the Australian Tennis Magazine. All good news agents, or you can subscribe. Get it delivered to your front door, tennismag.com.au. The January edition, not too far away.
In hand.
Beautiful. Thank you, Viv. Nice work. Vivian Christie, the editor. Now, Paul, coach extraordinaire, metrotennis.com.au.
Yes.
We're going to finish with your little coaching tip of the week for those out there who might play socially or a little bit more professionally. Paul, fire away.
Well, kids or anyone really who's had a lesson, and I know there's thousands of you out there which keep keep myself and others employed. After you finish your lesson, go home and do some practice shadow swings. Now, this is presuming your coach has given you a good model, which if he's a registered coach, he would have. So practice those shadow swings, forehand and backhand, do them in the living room, anywhere you like. 4 times 25, I think, will bring about a change in the motor pattern. And you can do that every night if you want and practice those shadow swings.
Okay. So you
need to build the motor pattern.
Reasonably large lounge room to say you're not knocking over any of the furniture.
Maybe on the patio for some people.
All the vases off the side table there.
That's it.
The shadow swing, there you go.
The shadow swings. And who's your tip for the wildcard playoff, BB?
It's really difficult as we close. James Duckworth, Jordan Thompson, Luke Saville, Ben Mitchell. Hard to go past any of those four. The girls is really wide open because Olivia Rogowska and also Jess Moore and Alison Bayer, they've sort of been around a long time.
Yeah.
I'd love to see maybe one of the young girls. Can Kimberly Beryl step up? I'd love to see Storm Sanders take off. Hopefully she can be injury-free and really have a great year in 2016. Get down there, folks. It's free entry right throughout the week. Kicks off 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. If you can't, get down there, tennis.com.au. We've got a live stream right throughout the week. Thank you, boss.